A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
You know, when you think about how we talk, how we effortlessly string sentences together, it feels like something we learned, right? Like riding a bike, maybe from parents or school?
Yeah, that's the common sense view, definitely.
But today, we're digging into a book that turns that idea on its head. Steven Pinker's The Language Instinct. He argues that view is, well, fundamentally wrong.
Mm-hmm. And our mission here is to explore Pinker's really quite radical idea that our ability to use complex grammar isn't just learned, it's actually a biological instinct.
Instinct, like walking.
Pretty much something hardwired into our brains.
Wow. Okay, so this was obviously a revolutionary idea when the book came out, and it's still making waves today, isn't it? In fields like psychology, AI. Absolutely. It's a science-based perspective that really forces us to rethink what it means to be human. Language, for Pinker, isn't some cultural gadget we invented. It's
right.
It's more like an organ.
An organ. Okay, so who's the guide on this journey? Yeah. Tell us about Steven Pinker.
Right. Well, he's a major figure, Steven Pinker. He's a cognitive psychologist, a psycholinguist, and a really well-known science writer.
Uh-huh.
Currently at Harvard, was at MIT before that, PhD in experimental psychology. So he's got the academic chops, no question.
But what makes his approach stand out? It's not just the credentials, right?
No, not at all. It's his ability to communicate. He takes incredibly complex stuff, neuroscience, genetics, linguistics, I mean, really dense topics.
Yeah.
And he makes it accessible, witty even. He uses great analogies. It feels less like a textbook and more like, I don't know, solving a mystery about the mind.
And where does his thinking come from? He didn't just invent this idea in a vacuum.
No, definitely not. He builds heavily on Noam Chomsky's work, particularly the idea of universal grammar. Chomsky first proposed that kids must have some kind of innate language structure to learn so quickly.
Right, the basic framework.
Exactly. But Pinker takes it further. He blends Chomsky's linguistic theory with evolutionary biology and cognitive science. He's not just describing rules, he's asking why we have these rules. How did language evolve?
Okay, hold on. That evolutionary angle is huge. So we're not just talking about, say, vocal cords evolving. Pinker's saying natural selection actually shaped brain circuits for grammar, like subject-verb agreement.
That's precisely it. It's about the mental machinery for syntax, for hierarchical structure. And yeah, that fundamentally changes how we think about human biology. It's not just bodies, it's minds too.
So the core goal of the book is really to tear down that idea of language as just a cultural tool, like, I don't know, the alphabet or something.
Exactly. To replace it with this idea of a biological instinct.
Okay, so the main argument then, we're all born with this innate universal grammar. What does that actually mean, this blueprint?
Think of it like a pre-installed operating system for language. It's not English or Japanese, but the underlying principles that make all human languages possible.
Hmm.
And this blueprint lets kids acquire whatever language they hear incredibly fast and accurately without needing formal lessons, just by listening. Pinker argues this ability is complex, it's specialized, and it's a product of evolution.
And he sets out to bust some myths along the way, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He loves busting myths. First big one, the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. That's the idea that your language shapes or even limits your thoughts. You know, Eskimos have 50 words for snow, so they perceive snow differently, that kind of thing.
Right, I've heard that.
Pinker argues that's largely wrong. Thought comes first.
Okay, and the second target.
This one's more down to earth, the language mavens. The grammar police, basically.
Oh, yes. Don't split infinitives.
Exactly. Those kinds of arbitrary rules. Pinker's a champion of descriptive grammar, studying how people actually talk rather than prescriptive grammar, which tells us how we supposedly should talk based on often outdated or illogical rules. He kind of gives us permission to relax about the grammar police.
That's refreshing. Okay, so if language is an instinct, Pinker needs some serious proof that this blueprint is there from birth. Where does he start?
He starts with kids. Children are the star witnesses. The key idea here is the poverty of the stimulus.
Meaning
kids master incredibly complex grammar, tense, plurals, nested clauses, you name it, even though the language they actually hear around them is, well, it's a mess. It's fragmented, full of errors, interruptions, background noise.
Right. Real life conversation isn't exactly textbook perfect.
Not even close. Yet kids somehow extract these perfect, abstract rules from messy, imperfect input. They're like little linguistic geniuses.
And you see this in their mistakes, right? Mm. Which aren't really mistakes.
Exactly. Take what linguists call over-regularization. a kid doesn't just parrot, I went. They often say things like, I goed or I braked it.
Uh-huh. My nephew used to do that.
It's classic.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful evidence. The child isn't just copying adults. They've never heard an adult say goed. They figured out the rule ad for past tense, and they're applying it logically, even to irregular verbs. It shows an active internal grammar-making machine at work.
So they're not mimicking, they're generating based on rules.
Precisely. And then there's the really mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah.
The creation of new languages.
Ah, the Creole languages and the Nicaraguan Sign Language case.
Yes. The Nicaraguan example from the 80s is just incredible. You had deaf children isolated in their homes using only basic family-specific gestures. They were brought together into a school for the first time.
Okay.
The first cohort sort of mixed their home signs together into a basic pidgin. But the younger kids who came in later, they took that rudimentary pidgin and spontaneously, within a single generation, built a full-blown, grammatically complex sign language. New rules, complex syntax,
yeah,
were works.
Wow. They didn't learn it. They created it.
They created it. It shows that innate drive, that blueprint, pushing for grammatical structure, even when the input is minimal, the instinct takes over.
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. So if language is the output of this instinct, where does thought happen? Does language echoes?
Do.
This brings us to mental leaves, right?
Exactly. This is Pinker's counter to Sapir-Whorf. He says, no, thought comes before language. We don't think in English or Japanese or Swahili. We think in a universal language of thought, which he calls mentalese.
Mentes, like a mental code.
Kind of. A non-linguistic representation of concepts and propositions. Our spoken language is just the tool we use to translate that internal mentalese into sounds or signs to communicate it to others.
So you can have complex reasoning, problem solving, planning, all happening in mentalese without needing words.
That's the idea. And studies of prelingual infants and nonverbal reasoning seem to support this. It also explains how translation between vastly different languages is even possible, because underneath, they're all tapping into the same universal mentalese.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's get into the nuts and bolts. How does this language organ actually work? He talks about a discrete combinatorial system.
Right. It sounds technical, but the idea is simple and powerful. We have a finite set of basic units, sounds, words, and a finite set of rules, grammar.
Okay.
But by combining these finite elements using these rules, we can create a potentially infinite number of unique, meaningful sentences. Think about it.
Yeah.
You've never heard or said most of the sentences you'll use today, yet you can create and understand them instantly.
It's like Lego bricks, limited brick types, infinite constructions.
Perfect analogy. It's not about having a massive vocabulary. It's the power of the combinatorial rules, the grammar, that gives language its infinite expressive power. That's the engine.
And this grammar has structure. He talks about hierarchy.
Yes, yeah, syntax isn't just a flat string of words. It's hierarchical, like a tree structure. Understanding the dog chased the cat versus the cat chased the dog depends on understanding that structure, not just the words. And that underlying structural template, Pinker argues, is part of the innate universal grammar.
And we see this rule-based system even with parts of words, right? Morphology.
Mm.
The WUG test.
Ah, the famous WUG test, classic experiment. You show a child a picture of a funny little creature and say, this is a wug. Then you show two of them and say, now there are two.
And the child says, wugs.
Exactly. Even though they've never heard the word wug before, they instinctively apply the English plural rule at S sound to this brand new word. It shows the rule is productive and abstract, not just memorized for known words.
Okay, so we have evidence from kids learning, language creation, the nature of thought, the structure of grammar. What about the brain itself? Is there physical proof?
Yes, absolutely. The evidence from neuroscience, particularly studying people with aphasia language loss after brain damage, is really strong.
Like Broca's and Wernicke's areas.
Precisely. Damage to Broca's area, typically in the left frontal lobe, often messes up grammar and speech production. Patients might speak in short, halting phrases, omitting grammatical words, walk dog, instead of I will walk the dog, but their comprehension can be relatively okay.
Yeah.
Then you have Wernicke's area further back. Damage there can result in fluent, grammatically correct sounding speech, but it's often meaningless jargon full of made up words, and comprehension is severely impaired.
So different parts of the brain handle different parts of language.
Exactly. This dissociation strongly suggests language isn't just part of general intelligence handled by the whole brain. It has its own dedicated neural real estate specialized circuits.
And there's even genetic evidence now.
Yes, this is really powerful confirmation. Specific language impairment, or SLI, it's a disorder that runs in families. It's genetic. People with SLI have significant trouble with grammar and articulation, things like forming plurals or past tenses correctly.
But their intelligence is otherwise normal.
Completely normal. Often above average in nonverbal tasks. This again separates language ability from general cognitive ability. And the discovery of the FRXP2 gene linked to a severe inherited speech and language disorder in a family known as the KE family provides a direct link between genetics and the biological basis for language capacity.
Wow. Okay, so summing up, this paints a really different picture of language. Let's crystallize the main takeaways. Theme one seems to be.
Language is a biological instinct, period. Yeah. It's not like learning to read or ride a bike, which require explicit teaching and practice. Yeah. It just develops. It grows in the child spontaneously.
Right. Like learning to see, almost. Yeah. Theme two.
That instinct provides us with the universal grammar blueprint. Underneath all the surface diversity of the world's 7,000 languages, there's a shared deep structure. Nouns, verbs, ways to ask questions, ways to negate things. These universals exist because they're built into our shared human biology.
A fundamental human connection. Theme three.
Modularity of the mind. Pinker argues the mind isn't one general purpose computer. It's more like a Swiss Army knife with different tools specialized for different jobs.
And language is one of those tools.
Exactly. A distinct mental organ. And the evidence from SLI, or even cases like Williams syndrome, where you have high linguistic skills despite significant cognitive impairments, really supports this idea of language being separate from general intelligence.
Makes sense. And the final theme, theme four.
Back to the grammar police. The logic of everyday speech. Pinker's point is that the grammar linguists study the complex rule-governed system everyone uses unconsciously every day that is the real, scientifically valid grammar.
So those prescriptive rules, like not ending a sentence with a preposition.
Often just arbitrary social conventions, maybe based on faulty Latin analogies or personal pet peeves from centuries ago. They're not grounded in the actual logic of English. So trust your intuition, trust how people actually speak. That's the real deal.
Okay. Pinker has such a knack for nailing these ideas down with memorable phrases. Let's touch on a few key ones.
Yeah, he really does. His core thesis is probably best summed up when he says something like, language is not a cultural artifact. Huh? It is a distinct piece of the biological makeup of our brains. Language is a complex, specialized skill which develops in the child spontaneously. That really captures the instinct part.
And on how kids actually do it.
He talks about the universal grammar being like a grammar-making program, a set of abstract principles built into children's brains. It's the software that runs the language acquisition process.
And his take on language versus thought.
Very clear. The secure wharf hypothesis is wrong. People do not think in English or Chinese. They think in a language of thought or mentalese. It really emphasizes that shared cognitive layer beneath language.
Right. And the one that empowers us against the grammar sticklers.
Oh, yeah. The rules of standard proper English are not inherent laws. They are mostly arbitrary conventions. A linguist's job is to describe how people actually use language, not to prescribe how they ought to. Basically, linguists describe, they don't prescribe. It's scientific liberation.
So, taking all this on board, how does it apply in the real world? What are the practical implications?
Well, for parents or anyone around young kids, it's huge. When you hear a toddler say, I braked it, or her runned away, instead of correcting them anxiously.
You see the rulemaking brain at work.
Exactly. You see evidence of this incredible, innate grammatical engine firing up. It fosters patience, maybe even a sense of wonder. Instead of thinking, oh no, they're learning it wrong, they're actually learning it brilliantly.
That's a lovely perspective shift. What about socially?
Big implications for linguistic prejudice. If you understand that all dialects, whether it's inner city vernacular, rural dialects, immigrant variations, are complex, logical, rule-governed systems in their own right.
Not just bad or sloppy English.
Precisely. Then you stop judging people based on how they speak and focus on what we're saying. It promotes tolerance and challenges linguistic snobbery, which often masks other prejudices.
That's really important. And in technology, AI.
Yeah, it's fundamental for things like natural language processing, or NLP. Understanding the deep, hierarchical, combinatorial nature of human language is crucial for building AI that can truly understand and generate language like we do.
Because current AI, like large language models, they learn statistically, right? They don't have that built-in universal grammar.
Exactly. They're amazing pattern matchers, finding statistical correlations in vast amounts of text, but they don't inherently know grammar in the way a human child does. Understanding our innate blueprint helps reveal why true human-like language competence is still such a challenge for AI.
Okay. So reflecting on this deep dive, what stands out most for you? What was the biggest surprise or takeaway?
For me, it's really the sheer scale of the shift Pinker represents. Taking language, something that feels so cultural, so learned, and anchoring it firmly in biology and our genes and our evolutionary history, it's profound. And it makes you appreciate the incredible cognitive power humming away inside every child's head. It's just mind-boggling, really.
Yeah, that focus on the child's innate genius is powerful. What sticks with me is the idea of language as a window onto the human mind itself. It's not just how we talk. It's a reflection of how we're built, how we evolved. It highlights this deep, shared structure beneath all our surface differences.
Absolutely. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it, if this complex, rule-based system for language is innate, hardwired, what else might be? Are there innate structures for understanding music or morality or social relationships? Pinker opens the door to thinking about the very architecture of human nature.
A lot to think about. It really does reshape how you view everything related to human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.